Welcome to the Vietnam Rising Podcast, where we have a discussion with the shakers and movers individuals in Vietnam about the opportunities in the business scene. I am your host, Minh Tham, and let's tune in to catch the inspiring stories, business opportunities, and how to navigate your way in this rising economy. This episode is brought to you by Waves. Waves is an audio platform for Vietnam and Indonesia. They are building a super app for all things audio. Audiobooks, podcasts, online education, and entertainment with a focus on local language content. Personally, I love Waves because I've been using them in my free time. Whenever I go to the gym, instead of listening to music, I will listen to many of my favorite podcast shows in business, lifestyle, and comedy, all in Vietnamese. This is infotainment at its best. Check them out at waves8.com. That is WAVES 8 as in number 8.com. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Rising. I am your host, Minh Tham, and today we are going to touch another hot topic when people talk about Vietnam and its business scene. Today, we are going to discuss about software developments or software engineering. Information technology has risen to become one of the most rapid growing industries around the globe, and the need for IT human resources is widely increasing over the year. Because of the cost of hiring software engineering has become very high, companies have been looking into countries like India, China, Indonesia, and Vietnam to outsource lots of their technical work. Or they will simply build a technical team based here in these countries instead. Today, we're going to discuss about Vietnam software engineering scenes, which is currently ranked top 5 most attractive software outsourcing countries in AT Kearney's 2019 Global Service Locations Index. And our guest today is DCO, co-founder of Coda School, the one and only English coding school in Vietnam, Charles Lee. Welcome, Charles.
Hi, I'm super excited to be here. I'm not just saying that because you forced me to say that.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much for your exciting introductions. So tell me more about you and Coda School.
Yeah, so thank you for the great introduction. I agree with everything you said. Vietnam's a great place to be. And I guess I didn't know it was number 5 in the top 5. That's pretty cool. To me, it's number 1. One of the things that's so exciting about Vietnam is that people actually like they call them IT people, but people in the tech sector are actually pretty popular. So before coming to Vietnam, I came from San Francisco, which is kind of like the mecca of software engineers in the world. But at the same time, I always felt like people thought I was boring, or people thought it was like, oh, just another software engineer. I think there's a lot of reasons why. I mean, there's too many software engineers and they all make so much money, they drive up the rents. A lot of people resent a lot of the software companies in San Francisco, but here it's like people are just really interested. It's a growing industry. People are building cool new things.
Yes.
And I think people enjoy the kind of, it's putting Vietnam on the map, top 5 in the world. That's great.
Yeah. Well, I think Asia families in general, there's some few career that people, the parents always want the kids to go, maybe a doctor or lawyers. Then right now, becoming a developer is also racing to become one of the top jobs that the parents want the kids to go to. Yeah.
Would you want your kid to be a developer?
I don't know. If they can, master their social skills, then yes.
But if they just saying that developers have bad social skills?
Maybe.
That's actually one of the top things we teach. It's true. So it's a rumor that developers are like nerds who don't know what to talk. Maybe, because your job, you're not going to be in front of a podcast interviewing people, developing those personal skills. But that's actually one of the things we teach at our school. So actually, we're not teaching soft skills so much, but so much about being a good employee or a good kind of successful worker in the 21st century is about communication, about teamwork and collaboration. And it's funny you bring up this thing about Asian parents wanting their kids to do this, do X, Y, Z. So my background is, although I'm not Vietnamese, I do identify much with that because I'm an Asian American. I was born in the U.S. But I grew up in a very science, math, only household.
Yes. So, like, grades is the most important thing.
Grades,
like,
the most
math,
important thing. Yeah.
Physics, like chemical, like chemics, all of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember, like, at one point, I don't know why, but I thought about majoring in political science. I really liked, I just really liked that stuff in college.
Yes.
High school slash college, and told my dad, like, I thought I was gonna, like, pass out. So he was very, very concerned about that for a while. But yeah, my dad.
But now I'm sure that he's happy now that you're doing, like, exactly what he wanted.
Yeah, yeah. So he was very supportive of the computer science angle. He is either, I mean, this was his second choice after being a doctor. Mm. So a doctor, I can't deal with blood and all these things.
Yeah, that's good. That's a safer choice. Yeah. I remember I have someone I know back when they were going to the U.S. They were like, okay, which subjects I should, like, major I should go to, and either to be the doctor or be in computer science. But he ended up being a doctor now.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah.
No, his parents are bums. No, it's like. But in computer science, like, you have to have people skills in that. So one of the things we teach is things like how to work with people. Mm. So in modern software, like, you don't, like, maybe, like, in the 1970s, there was, like, one guy in the basement writing everything by himself. Like, Bill Gates wrote Windows, basically.
Yeah.
But now, in 2020, like, these teams are big. You have teams that are in Vietnam, spread across the world. Like, you have a team that's in Vietnam, and, like, the countries you mentioned, India, Indonesia, the U.S., how do you get these people to work together? How do you get these people to understand the vision? How do you get the people to, like, tell you when things are going wrong? All these things are such a big part of software engineering today. And I hate to say it, but I think that's one of the biggest things that universities don't do. Mm. So universities don't teach you how to actually be, like, useful in the workplace. Mm. They might teach you, like, hey, like, this algorithm performs this fast, or, you know, a computer's built with these types of components. But, like, how do they explain to you, hey, when you have a big project and your boss is asking you for a million things and it's due tomorrow, what do you do? How do you communicate to the boss, like, you can't do that? Or how do you, like, you know, if you have 10 people on that team and there's 100 things to do, how do you assign who does what? How do you track what does what? If one person breaks one thing and everything breaks at the same time, like, what do you do then? All these kinds of scenarios are now a reality of life. Mm-hmm. You just don't learn that in school.
Yeah, I think also there are more companies now that then letting the engineering start just actually become talking with the customer as well. Because if you become like too distant, like, you try to build the product but you don't really know the needs of the customer, then it end up the product just doesn't work.
Yeah, and the engineer's like, this is exactly what you told me to do, right? And so that's all the new thing that's happening too. I mean, you talk about outsourcing. So yeah, historically, Vietnam strong outsourcing. But the new wave is all on, like what you said, having teams out here or just having, like, more product people out here. So now it's not just like, hey, here's this list of 5 things, do these 5 things.
Yeah.
People are like, hey, build me something great or build me something that users love.
Right? Yeah.
And to do that, you have to have people who have experience, can talk to people, can empathize, basically have some sort of social skill, not just coding skill.
Yeah. So Coder School is actually teaching all those aspects to the students?
Yeah, that's a story I always think about. So the way our courses have always been, it's, of course, we teach you, like, there's required concepts you have to learn, we give you homework. But my favorite moment every class is the last kind of part of class. And the last 2 weeks, roughly, it depends on the class, but the last 2 weeks of class, it's open-ended. We say, you build a project. And then people say, like, what kind of project? And we're like, anything you want. So, I mean, of course, we have some guidelines. We don't want people to build impossible things. So we help people find what they care about. We have some questions. But that's, like, my favorite moment. The very first class I ever taught in Vietnam, I had one student in that class. There's a girl. Her name is Jo. She's listening. I wonder how she's doing. It's been a few years since I've talked to Jo. But she has this moment where she did every homework assignment. So one kind of tactic in the early classes was I would try to make the homework assignments impossible. So there's, like, the required thing is make an app that does this. And the bonus stuff is, and there's, like, 1,000 bonus things that you can do. Mm. And she would just do all of them no matter what. Like, I'd try to come up with the craziest stuff, and she'd just do all of them. So she was, like, the most hardworking, one of the most amazing students we had. Mm-hmm. But the final project came, and she's like, all right, teacher, what should I do? And I said, you can do whatever you want. You can build whatever you want. She's like, whatever I want? And she stared at me with this very, like, confused expression. I said, yes, whatever you want. And then she kind of stared at me for another 10 seconds, and then her friend changed, and she's like, oh, whatever I want. in that moment where you flip from being an engineer who takes like direction, do X, do Y, do Z, to hey, you can do whatever you want. I think that's like an amazing thing you can teach people. It's not like something you get in a book, it's something you actually have to try. But when you unlock that moment, one, like it's so much more interesting to be an engineer because that's like the magic. You can create things from nothing as an engineer.
Yeah, you create ownership.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And two is you can actually make things that you care about that you find meaning in.
That's cool. So how do you start it, Coda School?
Yeah, so I can get into the story of how I ended up in Vietnam as a Korean American who had never been to Vietnam before, but I'll fast forward past that. And the way Coda School started was I wasn't doing anything, and people would ask me like, hey, like, cool, what do you do? And I'd be like, oh, I don't do anything. I'm just like here being a bum. And people were like, you must do something. And I feel like Asian people are generally much more persistent.
Mm. They just persist, just tell asking. You have to do something.
Exactly. Mm. And so I was doing one thing. So I was teaching online a little bit. So one of my best friends from back home started this online coding school. So you like have video chats with students. So I started doing that before I left the US. So I had a couple of students still on that platform. So I was still teaching a couple of people in like at weird hours, like 3 a.m. or something like that this time. And so I was like, oh, I teach some people online coding. I see.
Yeah.
And people are like, what? Mm. And especially 5 years ago, there was very little for coding education. Even today, there's not that much anywhere. Like once you graduate college, this is something I actually want to fix. This is not super related to Coder School. But like one thing I kind of, one of my great regrets in life is all the classes I didn't take in college. Mm. So like, you know, if I wanted to learn, I just mentioned about political science and my dad, but like think of all those cool like political science classes I didn't take. Think of all those, like I never took a basic psychology class. Do you take psychology in college?
I didn't, but I do research a lot about psychology because I just genuinely just interested in that.
Fascinating stuff, right?
Yeah.
Psychology. I'm running a business now, so I never took econ, and now I'm like really like
now you suffering. Have to learn everything again.
Oh, supply up, demand down. Mm. Oh, okay. These types of things, but like, you know, and also the college I went to, the most famous class there was an astronomy class. Like the professor is super famous. I never took that class. But all the things I think about is like, I want to learn so much stuff, but it's like after you graduate from school, it's like society actively is like, no, you can't learn. It's ridiculous. Why would you want to learn about psychology as like a 40-year-old?
Right?
So,
well, don't they have classes and seminar to learn about those now?
I don't know where those things are, and they're kind of weird. And
They don't really, well, depends, right? Either for econ or like commercial business, they will be how to get rich or like how to invest, all those seminar courses. Yeah.
But I miss like the kind of in college you just learn for like, because you're interested in something and you actually get people who are the best in their field, right, to talk to you, like college professors who are like, I don't know, it's as prestigious as it gets.
Yeah, they have like years of experience in that field.
And it's impossible to get that. But anyway, I'm digressing, but in computer science, it's even doubly true. So after you graduate from college, it's like very hard to have someone teach you to program. Mm. And it's really stupid when it comes to computers because computers change all the time, right? The technology you learn today in 5 years will be totally useless. Mm. Like today you're listening to this podcast on Waves app on your iPhone. In 5 years, it'll probably be like beamed into your head on like holograms or something.
Yeah.
So these technologies change all the time, but once you graduate from college, it's so hard to learn them. Find professionals who teach you these things. And that's kind of how Coder School got started. We realized then that at the time, this was 2015. Mm-hmm. So do you remember like what the worldwide phenomenon of 2015 was? And it started in Vietnam, by the way.
Hmm.
You probably blocked it. I remember.
No,
there's an app on the App Store.
Oh, is that the Flappy Bird?
Yeah, man.
Oh, okay.
Made by a Hanoian programmer, right?
Yes.
Took the world by storm.
Yes.
So that app was like, obviously top of everyone's mind then. And so a whole bunch of people, especially here, were like, man, I want to build iPhone games. Like, how do you do iOS programming?
Yeah.
So that was the first course. It was an iPhone programming course. And that time everyone's like, yeah, I want to learn iOS. But I mean, if you're not in college or if your college doesn't have an iPhone programming course, like how do you learn? Mm. It's impossible.
Yeah, that's true. And then like since 2015, like how has Coder School has developed now?
Yeah, so much. So since then we've had like 1,200 students. So I've had students from like every walk of life. It's been fascinating. But the biggest thing that's developed is now a lot of stuff. The technology we teach are different. I don't know where to start with that. So as a business, as a person, we've grown a lot. I would say today the biggest thing that's different is we have a more clear goal. So today, Coder School is a school you go to if you want to get a job in software development. So if you want to change careers or start a career in IT, Coder School is where you go, and we'll get you a job in 6 months.
So you guarantee the job for the students that come to Coder School?
Yeah. We even do a step above that. So we also have this other program we call the ISA program, so Income Share Agreement. It's actually you don't pay us anything up front, and you only pay us a percentage of your salary after you get a job. So like that's like a money back. It's not even a money back guarantee. That's like a money. You don't pay anything until it's worth something to you.
Yeah, but then what if they study and they don't, you know, they don't want to go to software engineering anymore?
Yeah, that hasn't really happened for us for a few reasons. One, I mean, it's not like we take everyone. It's not like you just like show up one day and start learning. There's a bit of an admissions process. We ask you a few questions, make you do some work to make sure you're qualified. But more than that, like people, like you have to show up for class and like make a pretty big commitment. So if you do that, then somehow like 1 month in, you realize, oh, I hate computers. I never want to do this again. That's also fine. I mean, that's better actually that you know that now, but that hasn't happened so far.
Okay. Very interesting. So how does Coder School differ from other coding school?
Yeah. First of all, we've been featured on Vietnam Rising podcast.
Yes. So that's important. That's massive. A milestone.
Yeah. Massive, massive. But I think the big thing is we are clear on our goal. So it's to get people hired. So it's very real world, very applications focused. Not to say like other schools are wrong. I mean, there's a million different ways to teach. I went to a college that taught me for 4 years about everything about computers. I think, well, not everything, but a lot about theory, a lot about kind of stuff you don't really use in work, but still like somehow useful for you in the long term. But we kind of fast forward through all that. It's like, okay, this is what you need to build stuff. And we try to go very, very fast. Our program's either 3 months or 6 months long, so it's not a long time.
Compared to like where you're from, like Silicon Valley, then how is the quality of developers here in Vietnam?
Everyone wants to know that question. I think that like there's this like statistic about Vietnam, which I really like to quote. It's the PISA test score. Do you know what the PISA test is?
No.
It's like this test that measures your math and science ability, and it's given, I guess, across every country. And Vietnam just dominates everyone in Southeast Asia. It's like Vietnam and Singapore are like vying for number one, number two, and every other country is like competing for like third place. It's way above. So I think on average, not that math and science are exactly predictors of how people do as computer programmers. That's one actually common misconception. But like there's some correlation there for how much people like that STEM side of education.
Yeah.
So I think the raw ability is like super, super high. And the cool thing I see in line with Vietnam Rising is like the enthusiasm for it is huge. So like I said, in the US, it's kind of like, like there are people who are excited about it, there are people who aren't. But here overall, I feel like people are generally pretty excited about building software, building things. The entrepreneurial spirit is very, very strong from what I've seen here. Everyone in Vietnam is like hustling something, right?
Yeah.
And software is a great way to do that. You can build stuff really fast, scale it. It's good.
Yeah, I think a lot of people that go to software engineering, they would work for an outsourcing company or a software company, and they learn and to work a lot of projects, and then like eventually they would start up something similar or from their own experience from that company.
Yeah, it's a great, I don't know, skill to have.
Yeah.
Do you have any startup ideas?
Yes, I actually do. I want to do a...
Are you sure you want to talk about on the podcast? Millions of people will hear about this.
Yes. I think it is already out there.
Okay.
Which is called Google Analytics.
That's the part of it.
Yeah. So, basically what I want to do is, so like Amazon, they have a basically a seller's analytics tools to help the sellers to just like analyze all the keywords, all the trends in their software and in the website. I don't see like any other like e-commerce website do it. They don't have a very supporting tools for the sellers. So I want to do something that I can, help people to sell Lazada, Alibaba, Tiki better. Yeah.
That's a great idea. You could make a lot of money doing that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I actually attended like a pitching competitions about it. And yeah, and then like the judge actually told me, that's where they told me that, yeah, IBM actually investing in something similar like this. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, but I would actually want to do it if I have a chance. Yeah, so.
What's stopping you?
Well, I'm doing my own software company right now. I'm managing it right now. So I'm quite busy and I'm still learning a lot from it. So I'm trying to gather as much experience from it before I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing interesting, I think that you would agree is that Vietnam actually, yeah. So earlier I mentioned that a lot of company has looking into Vietnam as like outsource countries, but then like a lot of people building their own technical team here, right? So a lot of them I know that they are startup like in the US, their market in the US, Europe, but then like they gradually move the team over here. So what would the advice that you give for those tech team that want to move to Vietnam? Either should they find local people here or should they move their personnel overseas to Vietnam?
I think, and this is the most obnoxious answer, it's a mixture of both. So I think anything in life fails if you just like, you're in charge of that. And we have a term for this in software engineering. It's like, if you throw stuff over the fence. Mm. So if like, even at a company, if like your marketing department throws something at the engineering department, it's like, go do this. Right, that's a very slow chance of success. You need to get people on the same page, communicating, understanding, shared vision, all these things. And I think the best success I've seen, I mean, you don't need to actually, okay, I take it back. You don't need to move people over here. That's nice, but
But sometimes you need it because like, well, not like the entire team, but yeah. Then you need like a manager, a product lead, something that actually have the expertise of the product.
Right, so what we recommend is like a quarterly trip of at least your like key people. So once a quarter, so once every 3 months, send someone over here, or better yet, send someone from Vietnam over to your headquarters and have just an exchange there. Mm. Just so there's personal connection and people can really communicate rapid fire. But beyond that, it's just like knowing that communication is like a daily habit. Like you have to build up that muscle. It's just like, you know, brushing your teeth. You don't brush your teeth when you feel like you need to. You have to just do it every day and not think about it. So the teams I've seen succeed, they make good use of their tools. Like they have communication tools, they do daily stand-ups, they have good video chats. They've invested in building that culture. And that's a very, I think, American thing, to be honest. Like, let me talk to you every day and see how you're doing. Are you fulfilled? Are you sure? Mm-hmm. Do you have any feedback for me? But I think that's one of the things I respect about actually American or Silicon Valley work culture most is that like over-communication, the over-feedback, so you can course correct quickly.
Mm, yeah, you can actually detect like what's wrong and what's happening like very fast, and then like you can solve the problem.
And that's like, I mean, it feels like a lot like overhead at the beginning, and I think people in more traditional industries are not used to that because they're like, no, let me just give you my like quarterly report, or you know, every 6 months I'll have a check-in with you. But American companies, or at least the startup companies, are like, let's talk every day, let's do a daily stand-up. We call it a stand-up because you make the meeting short but daily. Things like that. So as if you have those muscles, and it's a little bit harder to do cross country, but
yeah, doable. Like time zone difference too. Then someone has to stay up three a.m. to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you try not to do 3 a.m. So what I've seen from America and here is like, you try to do very early morning Vietnam time, and that ends up being at the end of the day American time. So you try to do like 7 a.m. and that's like, you know, 6.
Yeah, PM that's okay. Like people wake up at 7.
Yeah, and I think Vietnamese people wake up early. Like
yeah, like well. I generally wake up quite late, like 8, but then like a lot of people like 6, 7 is like.
See, 8 would not be that late in America. Like,
really?
Yeah. When I was an engineer, I would wake up at like 10.
Like, well, so students actually, school would start at like 7. So student has to wake up with their parents at 5 and 6. So that's actually a habit. But then I don't really attending school anymore. So yeah. So I able to sleep a little bit later.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like you're kind of lazy. I'm judging you so hard. You wake up at 8?
Yes. No. Yes, compared to like all the hardworking Vietnamese out there. Yeah. Yes, I'm very lazy.
Have you watched the Netflix series on street food?
Yes, I did.
And you watched the Ho Chi Minh City episode?
Yes.
That lady's like that lady goes to like the snail market at like 3 a.m. or something to prepare snails for the day.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, I think, yeah, a lot of people do that. Like, I know a lot of, so actually I used to go to the market and talk to like the old lady there. And then I...
Like for fun?
No, for work.
Oh, for work. For work.
I used to do like distribution channels. Oh, and then like I have to go there to talk to them because they are actually the one of the biggest offline distribution channels. Okay. And and they would wake up usually. Their day started at like 4 to start. God. And then like they finish everything. They close the store at 5. They go sleep at 8. And then like they start in the morning again.
Wow.
Yeah. And they don't do anything. They just like wake up, work, and then go home, eat, and sleep. That's how they do.
Hardworking people.
Yeah. How about, so tell me more about, so fun fact about Vietnam, actually. So a lot of company are now like going to Vietnam, like they are focusing in Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh as the hub. They would go there for like, choosing like outsourcing the company or like having the partner there, but then actually like I personally think that the software engineering like market, the salary has actually been jacked up for the past like few years because too many foreigners company come in and then like they pay a much higher salaries. So actually a lot of Vietnamese companies, so example for my company, we actually move our team further outside of the like central cities. Like I know some team, they go to Hue, they go to Da Nang, they go to Da Lat, and for personally my team, we go to Cần Thơ. So all those team, it helps us to, you know, reduce the cost even more. And I think it's also very interesting because the turnover rate is actually much, much lower because, you know, there's not a lot of jobs like available in computer science in those cities. So the engineer actually stick around much longer with the company.
I think it's an interesting question overall. So I think that you can say there's like a long tail phenomenon when it comes to computer science. So yeah, those jobs pay high because, I mean, you could argue that they're paying high because they create value, right? So you want good engineers. Like, say if you're Facebook, like the reason why Facebook pays so much for the engineers, Google pays so much for engineers, is because it's just important to their business. But at the same time, there's a lot of software engineering that needs to be done that may or may not be mission critical. Like, I get that like not everyone is building Facebook. Some people are just building like internal tools. They're still very important and necessary, but like they don't need to be made by like everybody, like the best, I don't know, the most highly paid people.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I think like, you know, in chairs, you can buy a $1 million chair if you want, but most people just need a simple thing with four legs that supports your butt. So I think you have to go to places, and you can see that happens in all industries. So manufacturing goes to different places. More complicated machines are still built in certain key places. So like, I used to work in cars, actually. So a lot of cars are still built in Germany, even as expensive as Germany is, because, I mean, there are reasons for that still. That stuff has been outsourced. There are car companies who are built, you know, China or elsewhere. Ooh, there's VinFast. Are VinFast cars built here?
Yes. Well, okay. Assembling here.
Assembling here. Where do they come from? All over?
Like the part is from China or in Germany, actually. Okay. So they're, I think the technology is from BMW.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
I want to get one of those VinFast electric bikes.
Electric bikes?
Yeah.
It's quite cheap right now. You should get one.
I should. I don't know where to. We don't have like a charging. I need to figure out where to charge it. But
wait, don't you just charge it? You plug it in?
Yeah, I don't know. But you have to have like a plug. I don't know where. Like, I live in an apartment. I don't know. Like,
yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's so. More difficult for sure. Yeah, to bring all the bike upstairs and plug it in.
Yeah, like similar to that software, like, you know, some like Ferraris would probably always be made in, I don't actually know where they're made, Italy or something.
Yeah.
But not everyone needs a Ferrari. Some people need bikes. Some people just need transportation from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually one reason I'm so optimistic about the future of software engineers.
Yeah.
Like, people talk about there being a shortage today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's not enough engineers. Like, holy cow, like in 10 years, the amount of computers that we'll use in our daily life will probably be 100 times more. Right.
Yeah.
So like, we're going to need 10 times more engineers at least. So.
But then do you think that it's going to get saturated? Well, It will it ever get saturated?
I don't know if it'll ever run out of it. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like every business, I think about two roles that every business I can think could use. One is another programmer to help build like simple software for every business.
Yeah.
Every business has custom needs that they have. Like for us, for example, like how do we manage how many people apply for our classes? Like, we actually have to build software for that. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But you also, I think every business could use a data scientist. Do you have data scientists at your company?
No.
You could probably use one.
Why so?
So it's like people can analyze like the data around your company. Today, the amount of data that you have, like, I mean, you talked about seller analytics, things like that. But for any business, there's so much data that goes unused.
Yeah,
like, think about like even like a restaurant, right? Like, when do people come? What do they order? On what days they order what things? What do women order? What do men order?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what are the costs? How can we predict, like, forecast the cost of this ingredient versus that ingredient? There's so many questions, and like data scientists are the best ones to like analyze those things and help you generate the most value in your business.
There are so many different like type of like software engineering. Then what's like beside data analytics, like how about the others? Like if someone wants to get into like learning or like switch careers, then what field, what language they should go in?
Yeah, this is a very common question. So it depends on what your goals are. But I would say if you want to get a job as a programmer of some sort, your safest bet is a language called JavaScript. It's the most common like internet language. So every web browser in the world understands it. Also, you can build other things in it. I mean, there are even like toasters that run JavaScript. There's a refrigerator by LG that runs in JavaScript. So it's a very popular language, useful for a lot of things.
Yeah.
In the realm of software development, there are a lot of angles. It's hard for me to choose one. The one that we teach is probably the most visible in daily life. It's web development. So the thing that powers websites, but also servers, stuff that runs on your phone, this is all kind of the same class of software. It's called web development, and that's probably that's where we still see the biggest demand on the job market. But there's a million different things you can do. So yeah. Vietnam
user
also...
User experience, user design.
Experience your design, there's a million roles. In Vietnam, actually, one thing I've seen a lot of is embedded programming, what they call like IoT programming, Internet of Things.
Okay.
So it's like building smaller electronics, microcontrollers, like things that go in cars or in electronics. That also is all code as well.
Oh, interesting. Were you started at a software developers?
Let me think. Yeah, my first job was in software development after college. So I worked at this company called Palm. We made this thing called the Palm Pilot, which was a very popular thing in the early 90s, maybe. it was like a PDA. So it's like before we had phones, we had PDAs. And that was basically like a phone, but like there's no connectivity. And then smartphones came out. That company actually made the first kind of popular smartphone. It was called the Visor or Trio. Their main names for it. I'm dating myself. But it's kind of like the Walkman of phones or something.
I see. So, and then like, when did you just decide to just move out to Asia?
Yeah, it's a long story. There's a lot of versions of it. I realized that over time, my understanding of why I do things or why I've done things has changed. I don't know if that's me getting smarter or me just trying to like force a certain narrative on myself. But the best way I remember it was one of the biggest things is I was 29 years old. And I had this like a ridiculous deadline in my head that 30 was like an important landmark. Do you think 30 is important?
Yeah, I'm sure. Like every 10 years should be important.
Should it? So arbitrary. So I was 29. So like I feel fortunate that I've been able to like travel a lot, see a lot of places. But I never really lived anywhere or experienced a culture other than some Korean culture, but really just American culture. So I want to find something different. I looked up all these places to go, like... I could go live. I made a list of places I could live for a couple months. And then Vietnam was on that list. And my original plan was to try different things because I couldn't choose. But Vietnam was the first place I came, and I just never left.
You just need to leave.
Yeah. So there might be a better place out there for me. I just don't know yet.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I don't think there is.
But then what makes you decide, this is where you should be for at least for the last 5 years?
So, like, I heard a friend of mine, actually, who started a podcasting platform company called Waves. He described it best to me. He was like, I just had a really good feeling when I was here. So my friend was telling me when he came here in Saigon, he just felt good. And that's very abstract and vague, but that's, like, the best way I've heard described. I just felt very positive when I was here, like people are excited to be here, like things are changing, there's a certain buzz about it, people are doing interesting things. And so people are just like positive, like people are optimistic. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
So I think other places, like if you go, I mean, there's some places in the US maybe that are like declining cities. If you've ever spent time in some of these old cities that are, where they're shrinking, industry's leaving, it's such a different feel, right?
Because everybody's stressed.
Everyone's stressed, but there's this kind of like malaise, like people are like, oh, like we're fading. And here it's like, it's rising. Like people are just like, oh, we could do this. Oh, why don't we do this? And like that kind of energy, it's really infectious.
And after, like right when you go here, you stay here a few months and then you started Coda School, right?
Yeah, man. Like, I mean, there's like a personal thing where I don't think I'm the type of person who gets bored. So actually, I'm pretty sure I could sit on a beach for like a year and I wouldn't get bored. So the original plan was just to relax. And I started doing this. I don't know why. I just was drawn to it, I think. I'm saying that because I don't want to be the type of person who's like, I want to relax, and then immediately starts doing something. My original intention was to relax, but actually, yeah, I did start Coda School pretty quickly after I got here. But for the first, I don't know, year, I don't know how long, it was basically just like for fun.
Okay. And what is the like the biggest achievement that Coda School and you have done?
I already told you, we made it on the Vietnam Rising podcast.
Oh, that's right.
Of things. Now, the biggest achievement we've had, I think, I mean, probably one of the biggest maybe feathers in our cap is we work with Facebook on a project. So Facebook sponsors us to run the Developer Circles Innovation Challenge of Vietnam. It's a contest spread across three cities, across Ho Chi Minh City, Hanoi, and Da Nang. And we like we teach local university age students. We run like this big contest at the end to see who can build the coolest project. We work with other great companies like Momo, Sendo, FE Credit, Haravan, Jatot. We're all partners in the last one. So things like that are really cool because I like having a big impact, and it really fulfills what we're about. It's just about kind of helping people be more useful in work. So have better careers, better lives.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah. I also noticed that there's a lot of tech companies that are now choosing Vietnam as their R&D center, right? Earlier this month, we just have Samsung like committed to build their R&D center in Hanoi. And then we have Grab also build their R&D center here. So compared to like other South Asia's like countries, then why would you think like those companies to choose Vietnam instead?
I mean, Samsung is like all in on Vietnam, man. I heard this crazy statistic about how much of the GDP Samsung is responsible
for.
It's like 20% or something crazy. Yeah. It's like it's so high. So I'm actually not surprised by Samsung like doubling down on Vietnam. It seems like it's worked really well for them, right? So they're probably the world's experts in how to build foreign teams in Vietnam because they've built this massive team here.
Yeah, I heard that their factory here actually is like a small city. Like 10,000 people or something there.
Oh man, it's like in Hanoi. It's like somewhere outside.
It's like Hanoi. in the central north. Yeah, like towards north. Yeah, and the north Vietnam is where most of the like industrial park is, and most company they would just put their factory there.
That's like the weirdest thing coming here that I did not expect. So there are a lot of things that surprised me about Vietnam. About Saigon, but the one that I did not expect was how many Korean people are here.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I see way more Korean people here than I did in California, where, you know.
Well, we have a Korean town here, right? It's in District crazy. 7.
Yeah. That's actually one of the perks of being here. It's like people talk about Vietnamese food being good. It is delicious. I'm a big fan of Vietnamese food. I could spend the rest of the podcast talking about Vietnamese food if you want.
Yeah.
But Korean food also is excellent here. Like, the Korean food here is like, I know, I'm almost as good as Korea, I would say.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
better than the U.S. Because, like, local Korean is actually, like, here, and they make business here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the U.S., you can't really have that. It's too, I think,
how difficult. Come? Because I thought that there's also a lot of Korean in the U.S.
There are. I guess, I mean, the U.S. is just a big place. Maybe I wasn't in the right place. I mean, L.A. is where most of us are. But, you know, in the North California, there's just nothing.
Yeah. And then, like, in Vietnam also, there are tourist spots like Da Nang and Phuc Quoc also very popular with Korean.
Right.
Yeah, we have direct flight from Korea to those spots. And then, sometimes there's some tourist city that whenever we go there, we would say we know for sure we're there because we see a lot of Korean or we see a lot of Chinese or we see a lot of, like, Russian. And we know, okay, we're at the city right there.
Nice. Also, I think that because there's a lot of Koreans, but I think like one thing I found surprising is that people are very open to, like, people in Saigon are very open to people from other countries.
Yeah.
America has a problem. I mean, America is,
like... Is that a cultural shock for you when you come?
I think so. Like, people are excited that, like, they're like, oh... I mean, there are a lot of reasons why Vietnam and America should have more strained relations, I think. But yeah. People are very open. Like, oh, you're American, that's cool. Oh, you're Korean, that's cool.
Mm. Well, I mean, because most of... Well, I would say any Vietnamese, they would have someone that's, like, has a family, has a extended family in the U.S. So it's hard to hate where some, like, a lot of your loved ones are, like...
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Also, I think there's, like, now a lot of, like... Every time I get on a flight and I fly into Korea, I'm like... There are a lot of little, like, half Vietnamese, half Korean babies, like, running around.
Oh, that's cute.
I think there's, like, a lot of, like, I've met a fair amount of Vietnamese/Korean couples.
Mm.
So,
like, well, I mean, if you're living in Vietnam and you're a Korean, then there's a high chance that you would meet a Korean girl, Vietnamese girlfriend, right?
Yes, I've met the other way too. So we have we actually have a friend of mine who's a Korean girl. Dating a Vietnamese guy. That's why she's here. I have multiple friends actually like that.
Cool. So what was one of the most shocking thing for you when you come here?
I can think of it exactly. It was, I was in the park and this guy had a squirrel on a leash. So I guess
squirrel on a leash. Okay.
I can think of that immediately. So there are a couple weird animals, weird pets. That's like the first thing that jumps out at me. That's like that kind of quirky, funny culture of Saigon is something I really enjoy. Mm. So my home, like, I guess like my main city I identify with is San Francisco. Mm. Specifically though, like I went to college in Berkeley, California. So that's a city that's known for being super weird. And like, I really kind of miss that a bit, but I found a lot of that here in Saigon. There are a lot of really weird, like weird people, like openly weird people.
Mm.
Every city has weird people, but Saigon has openly weird people that are accepted and kind of even celebrated for being weird.
Yeah. The humor, like, mostly accepted is, like, a very witty humor. Mm. And, like, in Saigon also, I think it's the capital of LGBT community.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're very, very open here.
Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that. But I was very surprised by that. On the bad side, the thing that surprised me most is... the prevalence of dog theft.
Oh, okay.
That's like something I don't think about in the U.S. Like,
that's
when I'm out
true.
Walking my dog, people are like, be careful, someone's gonna steal it. And I was like, what?
Well, as long as you don't, you know, don't let it run.
But there's all these like horrible, I don't know, I guess the internet, social media, blah, blah, blah. But like these videos, like these dog thieves, like they grab like the dog within the motorbike and like, you know.
That's true. I mean, I've personally never seen one, but I've heard a story about like people got taken away, like the dogs.
Yeah.
That's why most dogs in Vietnam, like if you don't have the time to walk, you can't even walk the dog here. Like most of it just like stay at home.
Right. Cause they're scared. Even like, but people I've heard like, will like, you know, break into your house and see
your dog.
Your yard or something.
It's rare. Like, cause like here, the South, we don't really eat dog meat.
Right.
Yeah. So unless you're in a city where that's popular, then yeah, there's more chance that you get stolen. Or if your dog is like quite expensive one, then yeah, they would steal it to just resell.
Super shocking. So in the U.S., I feel like there's some lines you don't cross, and like stealing a dog is one. I'm sure.
Well, happens, I mean, like pets here, like or dogs specifically, is not really a thing. Not like, you know, it's not like our best friend. It's just like, oh, it's a pet. Hmm. Or it's like an animal that we live together. I'm guessing like that's the different mentality.
Yeah, dude, in America like your pets are a family.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was actually very surprised when I saw my American friend and they were like, "Yeah, my dog is my best friend. I want to bring like them over to me here in Vietnam." And I'm like, that's a very bold statement about, you know, pets.
I see that growing a lot, though. Like, my predictions for the market. So, if I was long on industries, one is pet care. I see a lot more pet, like, salons, pet hotels, fancy pet food places popping up in Saigon.
Fancy pet food.
Okay. Yeah. Dude, like, in America.
You can eat with the pets, or like, the pets just go up and eat them?
No,
so.
No, it's like the food you buy. Dude, in America, there's this whole thing of, like, it's called barf food, biologically available raw food. It's this whole genre of like super high-end pet food that costs way more than human food. But I'm starting to see that stuff pop up here. Super bougie. And the other industry I'm big on So I feel like weight loss is going to be a big thing in Vietnam in the future.
Weight loss? Yeah. What do you mean? Vietnamese are not that like
fat. No adult is like, they're all super skinny. Mm-hmm. But I feel like every child I see is like super chubby. And I think it's like, I mean, it's what happens.
Well, I mean, if they are like child, then have they go through like, you know, hormones and stuff?
It could be that. Yeah. But I think it's also as like as the nation develops and like their food habits change. Like, I think right now I do see like a lot of sugar.
Yeah, much bigger for sure.
A lot of sugar, a lot of like very like kind of unhealthy options available. Mm-hmm. And so that like healthy eating hasn't been a big deal. Like, but now as it just gets more accessible, people can eat whatever they want.
Well, I mean, I can definitely see like generations like 10 years apart, and like even the height is just like completely different.
Way taller now.
Yeah, right? Way taller now. Like, they're much taller now, and I look at them, well, I thought you're like 25, 27, but it turns out you're just like 17. Wow. Yeah.
are you much taller than your parents?
No, actually, my parents are quite tall.
Wow.
So okay. I'm just a little bit taller, and I'm not taller than my dad.
Wow. Okay.
But then my siblings are like 10 years, 13 years, like younger than me. So I definitely seeing them like much, much taller now.
Nice.
Yeah, one of them is like, you know, quite chubby, like just you said, but then like he's not hitting puberty yet. So I'm just saying that, okay, maybe, you know, you're not there yet.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, the culture, I think that, the family is just, you know, Vietnam used to be very poor. And then like the kids growing up, they usually used to don't have a lot of food, or I don't get to have like formula milk. But now there are all of those available. And actually, a fun fact is that like people in Vietnam are very invest in the children. Yeah, they invest in the education, invest in like food. So now, because there's more resource available, so now they give as much as possible to the children.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, like, yeah, one's access, but also I think, like, traditionally Vietnamese food seems very like healthy and good, but now you have all this like stupid Western food. Now you have like hamburgers, pizzas, French fries, like tacos.
Yeah,
I think this is gonna be the bad for kids.
That's true. So is Coda School? You mentioned earlier that Coda School gonna launch in Hanoi soon.
Yeah, we're trying. So it's so we've kind of soft launched in Hanoi. It's, I mean, everyone says it's a very different market, and I was like, yeah, how different could it be? It's like pretty different.
Yep.
People are different.
Yes.
So,
do you think of opening in the like the Nang or something? Because actually, central people are where they most invested in education.
Oh, I did not know that.
So this is just my personal opinion, but I do feel like the central people are the most hardworking people, because of their, you know, I'm assuming because of their living conditions, there are a lot of like natural disaster, like storm, like flood happening every year. So actually the family very invested in the education for the children so that they can get better. And then like education is one big, a huge part in like central families.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, I
well,
do.
Not I'm you thinking, considering.
I just can't say anything because, like, I don't know. Like, I also feel very sensitive about, like, I can't make, I think it's okay to make stereotypes about types of Vietnamese people if you're Vietnamese.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I don't be like, true. Oh, like, these people are this, these people are that. I have heard that about, like, central people working super hard. Northern people being, the stereotypes I heard. So, okay. So, northern people are a little bit cold, but, like, very loyal once you get to know them. Southern people are very warm, but like may not actually maybe like overrepresenting how much they like you. Is that right? Have I heard the right stereotypes?
That's like 50-50, I guess.
50-50.
Yeah, I mean like in, I guess. Maybe because like in the South we're more open, like as like, oh yeah, we would like to get to know like a new friend easy, but then we don't trust them too easily. Yeah, I'm not sure about
that. Do you have friends from all over? Are you most of your friends also Southern?
No, yeah, I have my friends all over. And then my part of my family is from the North too. North and Central. So I have like all the roots, and including China too. So I have everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you understand Central people when they speak Vietnamese?
Yes and no.
Yes
the,
and no.
Like the part where Da Nang is okay. But in Hue and then like a bit towards northern, it's very difficult again. It's like a different language.
That's awesome.
They use different like terms and language, like not like terms and you know words, and then like you can't really know it unless you speak it. Oh. Is Code of School your first venture ever as a business owner?
Yes and no. I mean, I feel as maybe as a business owner, it's the first one that's gotten to the stage it's been at. So it's the first one I've been at for 5 years. We turn revenue. We've received investment. I do feel like on some level, you know, most venture people have actually been doing startups forever, just without maybe that label. Mm. So I've probably been trying to do little businesses from all the time. So looking back, it's like not surprising that I eventually did do it. Mm. But yeah, so at first.
Everything has happened for a reason.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what would be, you know, like, what would something that no one has ever told you about, you know, being in a startup, or like when you do cut a school and you wish you would know it and it would be better?
What's something no one told me? I feel like people...
Something that you wish that you know
before. I'm going to say, like, because people say everything. Every piece of advice you get has been told to you 100 times in, like, a million ways now on the internet. There's a million blog posts that have every opinion. I would say, like, let's see, what's the most important thing? I think... Yeah, I don't know, because, like, I feel like... It's like someone telling you, like, water will be wet. It's like, if you've never been in water, it's like, okay, I don't know what that means. But then you actually get wet. You're like, oh, this is what that guy was talking about. But overall, I would say one of the things that people tell me, which people talk a lot about imposter syndrome, and I'm sure it's something that everyone deals with all the time. But I think there are a lot of things around imposter syndrome that I'm still learning to appreciate. So specifically, recognizing it, recognizing when it helps you, when it doesn't. So people talk about a lot about overcoming imposter syndrome, but I think it's interesting to think about, like, why your brain reacts that way. Like, there is a defense mechanism. There's something it's trying to protect by giving you this imposter syndrome, and a lot of it ends up hurting you, ironically, which is why people need to get over it. But I think a lot of it actually is beneficial. So kind of thinking a lot, being very self-honest with yourself about when you are being an imposter and when you're not, is something I'm trying to work on every day.
What was, like, the most memorable moment for you as, like, being with Coder School?
The most memorable moment being with Coder School. I mean, this is going to sound super cheesy, but I'm just going to choose the one that comes to my mind first. It was just this morning. So one thing we're doing is we're launching a new type of class at Coder School. So we're doing some internal beta testing around a new class that we're going to teach. And so the way that we are doing this one is we signed up our own Coder School employees to be our first students so we can test on them. And this morning it just went really, really well. People were very happy, smiling, laughing, enjoying the class very much. And so just seeing the group of, like, 8 people that I all, like, I see every day, but and I love and respect, all enjoying something that they've made or they've helped make, very memorable. And I don't think I'm going to forget that anytime soon.
That's awesome. Was there any moment that you, you're wrong, you need to change it ASAP to get out of it?
All the time. I mean, I think that happens, like, several times a day. I think that, like, those moments, though, I guess, like, the thing I'm working on is I have those moments, but it's actually not like, oh, I'm wrong, I need to do something else. It's like, oh, I've been wrong for the past, like, 3 times. Like, oh, I didn't listen to that guy when he told me this thing, like, 3 weeks ago. Mm. Now I see that he was right. So trying to shorten the amount of time between, like, the
trial and errors.
And the error, exactly.
That's cool. And, yeah, what was you thinking that, yeah, what makes it all worth it for you to do all this?
I think in the end of the day, like, everyone's after the same thing. I mean, what's the most, let me try, see if you can guess. What's the most fundamental question of life?
What makes you most fulfilled?
Sort of. But, like, I would say, like, the question maybe is more often posed as, what is the meaning of life?
Yes.
Right? And so people have been trying to figure out that question since they were born. What's the meaning of life? Even as a little baby, like, that's the first question you kind of ask. Why are we here? Like, what? Like, what? Why are we here? So I think the kind of, for me, it's trying to answer that question. So what is the meaning of life? I can't answer that question, but I can answer, like, where do I find meaning in my life? So the most important for me is to feel like I have meaning in life and getting closer to answering that question. And so I think about, where do I find meaning? And that was a big question that dogged me a long time. So I worked at some awesome on awesome things in San Francisco. I feel super blessed to have been there, worked at great companies that, you know, raised tons of funding, super exciting, smart people, learned a lot. But the thing I realized I was trying to find is meaning. So I find a lot of meaning in like solving challenges and whatever, like writing cool code and writing super fast code, but the actual meaning of what you do. So for me, the most important thing and the reason why I like Coder School is I find a lot of meaning in what I do because I enjoy making other people feel better. So one of the things about Coder School and one thing I care about, like helping people have better jobs, is like you spend so much of your life working, right? Like you spend 8 hours a day, probably at least. That's maybe more time you spend, more time than you spend with your family, that you're spending with your coworkers at work. And the idea of spending most of your life doing something that you're not very good at is like super like depressing to me. Mm. So like people who hate their jobs, there's a lot of reasons to hate their jobs, but to me, the thing I zeroed in on is like the number one reason people don't like their jobs because they're not good at them. Like who wants to do stuff you're not good at all day? And like that's why I enjoy teaching people how to be better at jobs or have jobs that are like cool, the jobs they can get better at, because that's like what you spend most of your life doing. So your chance of finding like meaning or being fulfilled or enjoying your life is like, that's such a big part of it. And I just want people to spend like, you know, the third of the life that they spend at work, like to be happy.
That's very awesome. Yeah, and I think that's gonna put it high enough for us to wrap up this episode. Yeah. And yeah, thank you, Charles, for being here.
Okay.
Absolutely a wonderful guest today.
Thank you.